Can you hear me? I see your mouth moving, but I cannot hear you. Hold on. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? No, I'm going to leave and come back.
Right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, good.
I can't hear Dan though.
Oh no.
Dan, you want to try your audio?
Oh, now I can hear you. That's really okay. Weird.
Yeah, it was really acting very strange.
Well, and yours wasn't turning green either. So, but let's try my AirPods. See if I can get this to work. All right, I think we're good. I can actually hear something now.
Okay, good deal.
All right, I'm going to make both of you guys co-hosts.
Okay.
Are you presenting, Carver?
I'm going to put a title screen up for when people join. And then from there on out, I won't have any other presentations.
Okay. You could take mine if you want.
That's all right. Just for old time's sake.
Yeah. No, I was asking because John's been having some issues with his computer. So.
Oh, he's still, I know earlier.
So I met with John around 4 o'clock or something, and we walked through it. Got all his settings ready, so he should be all ready to present. But yeah, it's good to have you as a backup, Carver. So it'll be good.
Exactly. Is it better to show the PowerPoint or a PDF?
I think it really just depends on what you're used to. I usually just do a PowerPoint.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm trying to figure out.
Hear me right, Dan?
I can hear you, John.
Perfect.
It's coming through pretty loud and clear. It's good.
All right. So do you guys leave the staff? Is it on the whole time? The video? I mean, our picture?
Well, I mean, do I leave my video on the whole time?
Yeah, usually do we just leave our share our yeah, so our pictures on the screen the whole time, or do you for the meetings, is that a policy?
You can do whatever you want, John, but it's probably best for staff.
Yeah,
probably
I know, best for I just yeah, that. I just
you can go hide and you know.
Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna let the commissioners in. Well, I could wait for a second. John, you want to test? Do you need to test anything out, or you think you're okay?
I could share it just real quick. I have it up if you want, just to make sure it's smooth.
You do that.
Okay. Here, I'll stop.
We'll just test it out, and then I'll let everyone in. Looks like we have 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 5 commissioners. We had a weird thing going on with Chuck earlier, but
how's that look now?
Looks good. You have the plan amendment action up, so
that's a perfect. And I got the full screen, so that's okay. Perfect.
Yep, we're all set.
Can I give it a try, Dan?
Yep, sure.
You guys see that?
Not yet.
Okay, so let me see what else I can.
There we go. So, it looks kind of cut off to me. Oh, there it goes. Okay.
Okay, so that might take a little bit of finessing, but I think I'm okay.
It looks pretty good. Yeah, I just have to.
Yeah, it looks good.
Hey, Dan, how can we? Is there a thing on here to get our screen a little bit different, our backdrop?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you go under, I think it's under. No, it's not under security. Go under video. There's like a little carrot there. And you can go to blur my background if you want.
Under video.
See, on the very bottom, there's a whole list of little buttons down there. And then there's this one that says stop video. And there's a little carrot that you can click on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Got it. So there's options. You can choose a virtual background, blur your background. There you go. You got it all blurred. Carver's in some grass over there or something.
Exactly.
Hey, Golden Gate Bridge. All right. Nice.
No, I'll just do
all that. All right. Okay, I'm going to start. Definitely let Peary in. I'm going to let the commissioners in, and then once we get to 6 o'clock, I'll just let everyone else in. Excellent. Thank you, Carver. Mm-hmm. All right. Should I let Gary Bravin as well? Okay, I'll wait.
Hi.
Hey, Anna, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. Hi, Nicholas. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks. How have you been? Happy New Year to everyone.
Yes. Happy New Year. Things have been good. Hope things have been good with you as well.
Yes, very well. Thank you.
Good.
Hi, Daniel. Chuck.
Hi, Chuck. How are you doing?
Good. I'm at home, good. So I can't use my microphone speaker at the office. So.
No but worries. I'm glad we got all that stuff worked out earlier today. So I think we're good. Okay, it is six o'clock. I'm gonna actually, we have two people in the waiting room. I'm gonna close the waiting room and start letting people in.
Do we have a quorum right now?
I believe so.
Great. Go ahead and get the meeting started. Are we ready on staff's end? Yep. Okay.
We are ready. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of the City of Tucson Planning Commission. My name is Anna Cassidy, and I'm the chair of the Planning Commission. The responsibilities of this body are to advise the mayor and council and the Planning and Development Services Department on the adoption of long-range plans, policies, specific plans, and regulations that affect land use and development. Will staff call the roll, please?
Yes, thank you. Chair Cassidy.
Here.
Vice Chair Wellett.
Here.
Commissioner Zagier. Absent. Commissioner Martin.
Here.
Commissioner Pafford.
I'm here.
Commissioner Young.
Here.
Commissioner Ortiz Pino. Absent. Commissioner Schwartz.
I'm here. I'm here.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Very good. Present. Commissioner Schwartz.
Here.
Okay. Commissioner Warucci.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Lane. Here. Is Commissioner Lane present? Okay. Absent. Commissioner McKenzie.
Present.
Commissioner Kenny.
Present.
And Commissioner Lampo.
Present.
Very good. Thank you. That's all of them.
Thank you. Agenda item number 2 is election of chair and vice chair. At this time, I would entertain a motion of any nominations for the next chair for the Planning Commission.
Hello.
Hi, Chair Cassidy. This is Vice Chair Wellett here. I'd be happy to throw my name in to be the chair again if no one else would like to do that and would allow me to accept the role there.
Great. We have a nomination for Vice Chair Wellett to become chair. Do we have a second?
I'd second that.
Okay, we have a couple of seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor of electing Vice Chair Wellett as the next Planning Commission chair, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. All right, that's unanimous. At this time, I'd entertain a motion of any nominations for the next Vice Chair for the Planning Commission.
Chair Wellett, or Chair Cassidy, I'd volunteer for vice chair.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Ortiz Pino. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor of electing Commissioner Ortiz Pino as the next Planning Commission vice chair, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Say nay. That is also unanimous. Thank you. At this point, I will turn the meeting over to Chair Wellett.
Thanks, Chair Cassidy. I appreciate your service the past year of what you've done for us and fearlessly leading us through all of these endeavors. So thank you so much for all of your help and work moving forward. Looks like Puri has her hand up. Puri?
Hi, can you all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
So, Dan, I'm looking at the state that neither the chair nor the vice chair may be reelected for that position for successive terms. I'm sorry, I was trying to speak during the during the process. So, yeah, it's in your own rules. So you'll have to do the voting and elect a different chair, Lexi. I'm sorry.
Well, that's totally fine. I think in the past there had been some chairs previously be coming back, so I have no problem. It was just lack of volunteer, if you will. So.
Oh, Perry, we can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Have you been the chair for a year?
Anna Cassidy was the chair for the previous year, and I was before she was.
Yeah, I think Commissioner, or actually Vice Chair Wellett was Vice Chair, and then now she would become Chair. I think you can do that, right?
Yeah, so I'm sorry if I misunderstood. I thought that Commissioner Wellett was nominating herself to be Chair again, and that she was currently Chair, but she's Vice Chair.
That's correct.
Okay, my mistake. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem whatsoever. Thanks for the clarification, Pierre. So that puts us at agenda item number 3, approval of minutes and legal action report there. I'd entertain a motion from the commission.
I'll move to approve the minutes and legal action report for October 18th.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Cassidy, do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Second.
So it looks like we have a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. So we'll go ahead and move on to item number 4, which is the an amendment to the major streets and routes plan here. So staff, Carver or John, will you give the commission a report, please?
Yes, I'll be. My name is John Beal, section manager for the entitlement section, and I'll be presenting tonight's amendment to the MSNR. Let me share my screen.
Can everybody see my screen?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, good. Okay. What I wanted to do first and was asked to, because we're having quite a few plan amendments come to the Planning Commission through this spring. So we have two tonight, and we have another one coming probably in March, and maybe another one coming in April. So we thought we'd just do a quick overview of the plan amendment action, sort of what the plan amendment entails and the commission's role in some of the different land use actions that you will be seeing coming forward through the plan amendment process. So as you all know, the general plan is implemented through detailed planning and policy direction provided by the specific plans, which in most cases are at the parcel level or smaller geographical areas of the city. Specific plans include area and neighborhood plans, major streets and routes plan, sub-regional plans, and redevelopment plans. The one plan that the amendment to the Rincon Southeast sub-regional plan that's you'll see tonight, that's obviously a little larger geographical area, and so some of them are unique. The role of the Planning Commission is to review the proposed amendment and policy direction to see if it's compatible with surrounding areas, that this policy direction is in line with the general plan goals and objectives for the larger city, and then provide a recommendation to mayor and council. The different types of land uses that sort of evolve around the plan amendment action is one, the plan amendment, which is reviewed by Planning Commission and mayor and council. And then typically, if it's going through a plan amendment, there's usually a rezoning involved that will follow or maybe in the future. And so it goes through the rezoning process through either a lot of times it's a planned area development, a planned community development, as you would see on the Atterbury Trails, that was a recent one. And that's reviewed by the zoning examiner and goes through mayor and council. And that's more detailed and provides more site-specific or area-specific development regulations and some guidelines. The other one that's sort of unique, and that we're going to have two of them probably coming up later in the spring, and there, we've had one already in the city, our first one a couple of years ago, is a concurrent plan amendment rezoning process. And that's reviewed by the Planning Commission. And that, and what's interesting is you'll also probably get to see a little bit more of this site site plan and there as well. So you get a little bit better context of how this policy direction will be, what it will be providing. And that they are required, the applicant, to do a neighborhood meeting at least 30 days notice for that. And then they'll, at the neighborhood meeting, they'll present both the plan amendment proposal and the rezoning proposal. So that makes it so that the neighbors can see everything at once. And then after it goes to the Planning Commission, after the Planning Commission public hearing, we typically try to schedule it fairly quick after the zoning examiner so it stays on the radar for everybody. And it actually helps with the neighbors, you know, keeping engaged in that process. Then the zoning examiner, we usually about 3 weeks after, we want to make sure that the recommendation and the Planning Commission letters then put out, and then we send that as part of the rezoning packet. So I just wanted to give a little brief, a little bit about that, since we've seen quite a few plan amendment activity. Okay. So for tonight, what we're presenting is an update to the major streets and route plans by removing the future Goray Road alignment. So the Goray Road is extends from Silver Bell east across the Santa Cruz River and then over towards the Prince I-10 intersection. And this proposal is to eliminate that future arterial roadway just, you know, on that eastern portion between Santa Cruz and I-10. And staff is recommending the Planning Commission set this item for a public hearing on March 6. There was a neighborhood meeting held for that. That's required. It was through Zoom. There went notice for all neighbors within 400 feet of the property. All neighborhood associations within 1 mile of the Prince 10 pad. So it was for included that. There were four members of the public that attended. And the main concern that the public had was about access to the Prince of Tucson RV Park as to the east of the La Trolla Boulevard. And the city staff put them in contact with the real estate division to, and we followed up with real estate for them, and their access will still be guaranteed. It's, they'll be working through the, with the developer and the Prince of Tucson RV Park. This amendment really is only affecting the right of way through the pad. So the Prince 10 pad was adopted by Mayor and Council on August 22nd, 2023, and it was established for an interstate commerce development project. And during the review, it was identified that the right-of-way would need to be removed, that Goray Road right-of-way, but it was said it was okay to be removed at a future date when the Transportation Department of Transportation and Mobility would update the MS&R. But they got approval, but that's not happening soon enough for this project as they're coming through, as the owner is in the process of purchasing public right-of-way within the development to establish a private roadway network, and the which was always contemplated as part of the pad adoption. And so the part of that with the right-of-way process, what came up was in the right-of-way that the real estate mentioned as part of their transferring and everything this way of that agreement is that they do need to have that right-of-way removed from that. So we, part of the plan amendment process is to send the proposal out to different review departments. In this case, primarily we sent it to the Department of Transportation and Mobility. And the DTM supports the proposal, as at this time they do not have any plans to develop this segment of Goray Road. Likewise, we also look at plan policy and Plan Tucson, which supports spurring economic development for Tucson by providing shovel-ready land for major employers. It encourages a mix of high-quality, light industrial, commercial, multifamily housing along the major interstate corridor and urban trail systems such as Interstate 10 and the Loop. The Santa Cruz plan recognizes this area, as it was during the rezoning, that the calls out for more intense private development, such as park, industrial, and commerce uses in this area. And then, as I mentioned before, the Princeton pad really contemplated, as it develops, their different development areas of acquiring portions of La Jolla Boulevard and some reconfiguring the Fort Lowell Road from the city of Tucson to develop this private roadway network. That was all reviewed and looked at also by DTM during the rezoning process. So in summary for this proposed amendment to remove Goree Road is the creation of a private roadway network within the Princeton pad aligns with the planned Tucson goals and policies to promote economic development through shovel-ready sites. The Santa Cruz area plan recognizes the need for private mixed-use development in this area along Interstate 10 in the Loop. And again, the Princeton pad, as adopted by Mayor and Council, identifies the need for future potential of a private roadway network within this development for the pad project to go forward. And the Department of Transportation and Mobility has no objection to the proposed amendment to the city's MSNR. And that this segment of Goree Road, it doesn't currently exist except on the map, and it was designated for future arterial road and future width of 150 feet. But the reservation of this right-of-way was part of a previous planning project concept to extend it across the Santa Cruz from the Silver Bell to the freeway. And that meant a bridge going across the Santa Cruz. And that is, you know, not in the plans of DTM to do that or the city's plans. Maybe as current. So the recommendation is for the Planning Commission to set this item for a public hearing March 6, 2024. And then I would ask if there's, and the city again is the applicant, but I didn't state that early on, the city's the applicant for this amendment. So if there's any questions from Planning Commission, I can address those.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Beal. I appreciate your presentation. I'd entertain any questions for staff here as it relates to the amendment here being proposed. Commissioner Zegier, your hand is up.
Hi, thank you. Sorry, I had trouble with my internet that I got into the meeting late. But I looked this over. I have kind of one question, and it goes along with this is a highly developed area. What type of open space areas and or also as far as the runoff being so close to the Santa Cruz River, as far as the plans to prevent runoff and water harvesting on this large plat, is there a major plan?
Commissioner Abreeze, the site went through a rezoning, and it went through originally with the Mayor and Council, and the pad has those stipulations in there to deal with the drainage and how it's laid out. It also went through reviews from Pima County as well, and then it also went through a major change where they added some additional land, and that in the council member's office in Ward 3 actually worked with the developer and actually adding and enhancing more water harvesting policies in there and working with them on the draining. So that drainage. So that was, you know, added in into that. This particular amendment or request for the Planning Commission tonight is to remove this portion of Goree Road off the MSNR map so that the applicant can propose, can move forward with his project, but mainly working with real estate to for some real estate acquisition.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Ortiz Pino, your hand was up next.
Hi, thank you. My question is, in the internal circulation plan of the PAD, is all that roadway going to be dedicated to the city, and like the maintenance efforts over this, are they going to be private or Yeah.
The streets will be private, from what I remember in the pad, and as well, I mean, obviously there's arrests. Access around will be the city in some of those areas.
But internal circulation will be private. So
that's correct.
I assume there's maintenance agreements for those roads?
Well, yes, they would be in charge of, that's correct. They would be in charge of providing the maintenance for those roads.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner McKenzie, your hand was up next.
Good evening and thanks. Two questions. What is the what kind of development is the applicant proposing? I didn't have time to read through all the material to discern that. And two, could somebody show me where the loop trail figures into this parcel and this road?
Sure. So the what's the proposal tonight is to remove the Goray Road off the MSNR map. So right. That's what the proposal. The pad itself was rezoned and adopted by Mayor and Council for interstate commerce development. So it could be some park industrial, light industrial, and commercial uses within this area. The loop, I don't know if you can see my
Yes, I can.
Yeah, so it's along this little area right here where the loop is. So they could, and so we worked also with the county to make sure that, you know, with any drainage that it's not going to interrupt the flow of the loop. And so, but that's why we're talking is about the loop. So the developer can play off of that as well too, if they want for access onto the loop.
Okay. So there is not a specific development and applicant has proposed. This is a general action so that developers can begin to propose projects for that space. Is that right?
Sort of correct. So the action so tonight for the action, the city of Tucson is the applicant to remove Goray Road off the MSNR map in order to let the developer who went through a rezoning for this project area to move forward to keep doing the infrastructure, roadways, and keep moving forward to develop that.
So there is a specific project in mind.
Well, yes, the pad, this whole area, the pad called out with some for a proposed interstate commerce development project for a commercial park industrial, but there's nothing specific coming in for that at this time. It's a pad document that can be phased in over time.
Okay, so there is not a specific developer or a specific project yet for this space.
Correct. There's a master developer who's trying to put that all together.
Okay. All right.
And what we need in the request today is to remove that piece of Goray Road that's shown to go through there with a right of way of 150 feet to remove that so he can move forward to put together that private roadway network and start some infrastructure on that.
Right. Okay. I get it now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the commission to ask of staff here? Or the applicant as well, I guess. If no one else has any questions for staff as it relates to the item being presented here this evening, I would entertain Commissioner Owarake, you have your hand up.
Hi, yes, I have a question. Is there anything keeping the master developer from being the applicant on this? Does the city have to be the one applying for this amendment?
Yes, typically for the major, because the city's is actually in charge of the major streets and routes, the planning development services, along with the Department of Transportation. And so the city's, you know, in order to make sure that it's really the city action of these roadways of widening them or to narrow them or those kind of actions. So that's why the city, as typically the applicant on these MSNR updates to the map.
Great, thank you.
Great, thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing no one raise their hands or scream at me here on the online here, I would entertain the commission to set this item for public hearing on, I believe, the date. John, if you could jump one slide for me or two on March 6th, I believe, is when we are
Yes,
to
it
set
is
this.
March 6th.
So I'd entertain a motion from the commission to set this item for public hearing on March 6th.
So moved.
Seconded.
Good. Perfect. So I've got Commissioner Cassidy moving the item there to set the item for public hearing, and it was Commissioner McCancy seconding that. So all those in favor to set the amendment to the Major Streets and Routes Plan for public hearing on March 6th, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Great, hearing none. It sounds like the motion passes unanimously to set this item to go to public hearing on March 6th there. So thank you very much, Mr. Beal, for your presentation there. I appreciate it. At this time, we are moving on to agenda item number 5. And at this time, I unfortunately have to recuse myself from this item due to a conflict of interest. So I will be signing off for the rest of the evening, and Vice Chair Ortiz Pino will be taking over from here on out. So I appreciate all of you participating and being here this evening, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Good evening.
All right. Thank you. So looks like I got myself into something right off the bat. Thank you, Carver, for sending me the script. And I guess, at this time we can, move towards the next item. Staff would please present the next item.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Let me introduce myself while I get the screen set up. My name is Samuel Paz. I'm a lead planner with entitlements. I'll be doing a presentation on a plan amendment this evening. And let me see if my computer cooperates. Can you guys see my screen okay?
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So again, I'm presenting a plan amendment to the Rincon Southeast Subregional Plan, plan amendments to map detail 4 and 8, and the creation of special area policies. This plan amendment request is best understood as a two-pronged approach to amend land use categories and environmental policies of the RSSP. Land use category changes specifically on map detail 4 and map detail 8. In addition to those land use changes, there's also the addition of special policy areas 1-05, specifically related to the environmental policies of Arizona State Land. The Rincon Southeast Subregional Plan and this plan amendment fall into the Southlands building block as identified by Plan Tucson. Plan Tucson further describes the Southlands as an area that's defined as long-term growth area formed predominantly by large tracts of undeveloped land located at the southeastern and southern perimeters of the city. A large portion of this area is administered by the State Land Department. Prior to releasing these lands for development, the state will initiate planning efforts to promote orderly phased development that reflects sustainable and innovative community design. Further in Plan Tucson, the Southlands building block guidelines have a plan plan alignment or plan policy alignment. Included in those policies are looking at solutions and strategies for better community design, looking at master planned and community-centric development along Howden Corridor. There also is support for master plan areas that reflect sensitivity to environmental resources, and there's further support to conserve and enhance habitat when development occurs, and to support the development and management of healthy and attractive urban vegetation. And so this is all within the Plan Tucson Southlands Building Block Guidelines. Some policy background. So this plan amendment this evening is interesting because it amends both the land use and the environmental policies within the document. And so it touches or builds upon or is informed by numerous existing policies. The first one being the Unified Development Code, which outlines the PAD, PCD process. It also incorporates the floodplain, the WASH, and the ERZ standards. It's also supported by Tucson Code Chapter 23, which defines the ERZs, the Environmental Resource Zones. It's also further supported or further defined by the Floodplain and Erosion Hazard Management Plan as part of Tucson Code Chapter 26. And lastly, it's also included into the WASH regulations of Chapter 29. So these are policies that inform it, define it in some ways. And so these all reference the amendment. This is a context map, kind of showing you the extents of the Rincon Southeast Subregional Plan. The tan area shows you the full extent of the plan. The areas in pink are referring to the map detail 4. The areas in green are also referring to map detail 8. And then you'll see in the crosshatch pattern, that is the special area that touches both map details 4 and 8. This is the existing map detail number 4. And in the next slide, you'll see the comparison and the change. This is the proposed map detail number 4. Map detail number 4 amends low intensity rural to urban industrial. And this is reflected in the gold color in Amendment Site 4. Map Detail 4 also amends medium intensity rural to E, medium high intensity urban. And this is reflected in the blue shaded area on the map. This amendment allows for PADs, commercial and industrial zoning districts. This map also highlights the resource conservation areas, which are subject to change and fall within the special policy areas. Moving on to existing detail map number 8. This is the proposal. So the map detail number 8 amends low intensity rural and medium intensity rural to medium high intensity urban. And that's reflected in the blue shaded area. This amendment allows for PAD, residential, park, industrial, office, and mobile home zoning districts. And similar to the previous map area, the resource conservation areas are subject to change as they fall within the special policy areas. Again, this is just an overview of those changes. You have medium intensity rural and light intensity rural being modified to medium high intensity urban for map detail number 4. And then you also have some of my screen's cut off, so I'm trying to read what's behind the screen. But you also have the medium intensity rural and low intensity rural being changed to medium high intensity urban. I'm trying to move my screen. No, yeah, I think that's it. Moving on a little bit to the floodplain context. So the Rincon Southeast Subregional Plan is in an area that's been studied for the last 30 years in terms of environmental systems, habitat modeling, riparian habitats, WASH management. And so that kind of is the backdrop in terms of the applicant seeking to define the area with the special policy areas. and getting more into detail for the special policy area. This is aligned with the city's long-term growth strategy to promote innovative and sustainable growth within the Southlands. The special policy areas include phasing, performance, and review criteria for development. They would establish evaluation methods and flood control parameters. They would identify potential floodplain consolidation and channelization of braided washes. They would also consider the impacts to the National Floodplain Insurance Program. They will utilize an existing review body known as the Stormwater Technical Advisory Committee during subsequent entitlements and zoning review as an option. A little bit more detail about what is known as STAC, the Stormwater Technical Advisory Committee. This is a committee that was, it's an ad hoc committee that was formed in 1997 as a result of the WASH ordinance. And so their duties typically have been to review floodplain variances and any policy related to floodplain management. The STAC makes a recommendation to the director of the Department of Transportation to be forwarded to mayor and council on technical issues. So with this creation of the special policy areas, the role of STAC may be embedded into the entitlement and the secondary review process as both a body to establish criteria for reviewing floodplains and to review those findings at the PAD and PCD process. That results will be incorporated into the zoning examiner and also forwarded to mayor and council. A little bit more about planned community developments. There are some benefits from doing large-scale planned community developments. You provide a secondary planning process for large single-scale, single-ownership parcels. You promote unified and master plan developments that conform to the best practices, city policies, programs, and other sustainability and conservation programs. You allow flexibility that would not otherwise be attainable under conventional zoning districts. It also promotes timely funding, planning, and development of public facilities through phased, integrated, and timely construction of infrastructure. PCDs also support sustainable land use patterns and mobility options while being responsive to the natural features and topography of the desert environment. PCDs also create development areas which establish permanent density and land use intensity. Planning summary. So again, in summary, map detail four amends, amendment allows for PADs, commercial and industrial zoning districts. Map detail number eight, amendment allows for PAD, residential, park, industrial, office, and mobile home zoning districts. And it aligns with the intents and policies of Plan Tucson. From an environmental perspective, the special area policies utilize existing solutions and strategies to provide improved level of community design. They provide flexibility of environmental systems with oversight of STAC and embed STAC in the entitlement and secondary review process. It also aligns with the intents and policies of Plan Tucson. Sorry for the dog in the background. As a result, staff recommends the Planning Commission set this item for a public hearing for March 6th, 2024.
All right. Thank you, Sam, for the staff presentation. Would the applicant like to present?
Yes, actually. So we're going to go ahead and take over the screen sharing here. Right, and then I'll turn it over to you, Kira, to go ahead and kick us off.
Is it running? Yes.
There we go.
Good evening, Sharon and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Carrie Sylvan with Lazarus and Sylvan, and I am representing the State Land Department. I want to introduce Karen Dada, who is the Assistant Director of the Real Estate Division with the Arizona State Land Department, and Brian Underwood, who probably needs no introduction to this group. and will be doing a lion's share of the presentation. We're excited to be here. We've been working on this for, I would say, probably years as between the State Land Department and the City of Tucson. It's a real opportunity for economic development in an area of our region where we are targeting for economic development with the extension of the Sonoran Corridor, and also are focusing on floodplain management and wildlife corridors based on existing conditions and that have changed in the last 30 years since this plan document was actually adopted for this area. I'm going to give you just a little bit of background about who State Land is, and then Brian's going to be the one to step through some of the highlights of the amendment. On this slide, what you'll see is the Southlands down on the south, aptly named Southlands. It's really, for all intents and purposes, a blank slate. On the south, it's on the periphery. It's contiguous to land, and it's owned by a single owner, which is a very unique situation that allows a level of master planning that was accomplished in Atterbury and accomplished at H2K in the zoning. And this, what we're trying to do is set this plan amendment forward so that the same approach can be accomplished. The direction that we have from Plan Tucson is acknowledging that this is an area for an opportunity for master planning and suggesting that we do that. So that's what a lot of this is about. We do need to update, as I think staff mentioned, and you'll hear again, the RSSP, the Rincon Southeast area plan is really, it is, the last time this area was really looked at was over 30 years, about 30 years ago. So it's time for this plan to be updated. So a little bit about State Land. For those of you who are not familiar with the State Land Department, Arizona State Land was set aside at statehood by the federal government to help fund our state's essential public services. The State Land Department was created as trustee to manage those lands on behalf of beneficiaries, and I'll talk about those in just a minute. So there's over 9 million acres of land. It's the blue on this map throughout the state of Arizona that the land department manages for those 13 beneficiaries, primarily the education system. You'll see there's significant land in southern Arizona. And what's happened over the years is that our communities have slowly grown into that land. I just want to highlight the blue area on here, as I said before, is state land. The white is private land. So really within the entire state of Arizona, the blue and the white areas are the only areas available for economic development and growth. State trust land was set aside, as I said before, at statehood by the federal government. The Constitution and state statutes govern how the State Land Department manages these lands. One of the primary pieces of confusion for a lot of people is that trust land is somehow public land or open space. That is not the fact. So trust land is not public land. It is an asset that funds the trust. So it's really, can you scoop that thing up? Sorry. Yeah, it's more akin, thank you, to private land. The asset is the land, and then through lease or sale, it provides the revenues to the beneficiaries. So as trustee, the State Land Department's job is to manage the land in a way that will generate income for the beneficiaries of the land. As I said before, the purpose is for State Land Department to act as trustee for beneficiaries. So about 8 million of the remaining 9.2 million acres of trust land, again, it was the blue in that prior map, are assigned to Arizona's K-12 public schools. And then there are 12 other institutional beneficiaries that are the folks who State Land manages for. One of the really interesting things to me is that when this was set aside, every parcel of state land is actually tied to a particular beneficiary. So there's no state land department really manages all of it for all of the beneficiaries, and then each parcel, each piece of land is tied to the beneficiary. The state trust lands have to be sold for fair market value as determined by an appraisal. Any land sales or leases longer than 10 years have to be sold at a public auction. And then again, every dollar that's earned from land sale goes to the trust. And the state land department is a general fund agency. And what it does is we partner with local governments for land planning and entitlements. So as I mentioned before, we're excited to be here because it's been years. And part of what we've been working on is taking the direction, right, from Plan Tucson, which is to master plan this, and really figure out what all of our common goals are and establish policies for a future rezoning at a later date. Those shared policies or shared common goals are economic goals benefiting from the consolidated single ownership of the land that we can really plan for, and acknowledge that this is an area that we have highlighted for growth and major employment. We also want to balance that with the current dispersed sheep flow patterns and the opportunity to really create more contiguous habitat. So consolidating sheep flow into corridors and really enhancing those areas. The flood conditions have changed over time. Again, it's been about 30 years. 1990s was the original policy document. And so a lot of this was taking a look at those conditions and how they've changed. The benefit is also reduced infrastructure costs to encourage growth in the area. The other benefit of consolidating and enhancing these corridors is it really creates more contiguous areas for wildlife and to be able to connect to the rest of Rita and to the Southlands. With that, I'm going to turn this back over to Brian.
All right. Brian Underwood here, and I'm going to walk us through some of the salient points to the proposed amendment that we're making to the Rincon Southeast Subregional Plan. So I'll start by recapping some of the history of the Rincon Southeast Subregional Plan, which was carried over from the county's comprehensive plan, their 1992 comprehensive plan, and adopted by the city of Tucson in 1995 for a massive 410 square mile area that you can see on the cover of the plan there. And I have another map that shows it a little better as well. But, that area is, that the plan covers, and the policies that are in it are no longer reflective of current development trends and drainage patterns, particularly in the area where we're proposing this amendment. And so you'll see if you've looked at the plan that it's chock full of antiquated land use and policy direction that is in some cases in conflict or redundant with existing code and regulations that we have today. And that's really for a lot of the sub-regional policies that cover that entire 410 square miles. And that's particularly in the areas around the fringes of the city of Tucson, where you can see how that plan kind of comes in, right here around the city limits here. And so as things have become more urbanized, that plan has become more out of date. And as I think, Carrie had mentioned, the last time, it's a 30-year-old plan, but the last time that it was amended was in 2005, and it was actually for some housing and TEP's Vail substation, which sits in the middle of, or at the upper middle end of map detail 4, changes there. So just happens to be that the last amendment was in the same area where we're currently proposing an amendment. So here it's a little easier to see how expansive this plan is. You can see how it extends all the way to the Saguaro National Park boundary, all the way to the Cochise County line over on the east side. And what's interesting is that there's no real land use guidance for any of this land out here. So for the land that's within the city of Tucson, at least in the areas where we're proposing an amendment. There's land use guidance. Otherwise, the rest of this 410 square miles is just given direction for the overarching subregional policies. And a lot of those, I would say, are more applicable or still applicable to some of those more sensitive areas where you are up close to Saguaro National Park, or you know, where you can see the Cienega coming through and the conservation area that's associated with that. So I think, you know, some of that policy would still apply in some of those areas where urbanization hasn't occurred yet. And for us, where we're proposing our amendment is within the, you know, the flatter area that's west of I-10 there. And it's situated between I-10 and the prisons that are along Wilmot there. So if you look at this map, that area outlined in blue, the blue outline, that is all of the state land department's holdings within the Southlands. And then the area that is the blue fill, that is our REDA 10 area we're discussing tonight for the proposal. So taking a closer look at REDA 10 itself, it's about 8,300 acres of contiguous land by a single landowner, as Carrie had mentioned. And it's well positioned to serve major employers for a number of reasons. And one of them being that H2K pad that was mentioned sits on the east side of I-10 over here and butts up against the eastern edge, if you will, of the REDA 10 property. So that area is planned for much of the same as what we're proposing in REDA 10. So it creates some synergy there. And then as you can see, REDA 10 kind of sits right at the epicenter of all of the, you know, our logistic amenities that we have for large scale employers. So you have terrific interstate access. You have the airport right there, the Port of Tucson to provide rail distribution. You name it. You even have Pima County Fairgrounds where they're proposing the Southeast Employment and Logistics Center. And so that's a big economic development and industrial major employer draw to that area. And that's an area where Pima County is investing heavily to attract economic development. And then you can see there in the gray where we have the Sonoran Corridor preferred alignment from the Tier 1 EIS, which basically comes right through the REDA 10 property and hooks in here at the REDA Road interchange. And it follows that LaVail connection road outline there. So going into just a high level overview of some of the amendments that we're proposing here, I'll get into some more detail on other slides, but just as a broad overview, we're proposing to change the land use designations for the state trust land within two map details, 4 and 8. And also all other state trust land within the Southlands, so that area that was the rest of the area outlined in blue, is not included within any of the map details. So we're not proposing anything on that land because there are no, currently there is no land use guidance for it. It's not included within detail. And so what we're proposing covers those two map details, but it also, in order to unify that, we propose this special area policy. And that's really to isolate just the state trust land that's within those two map details and apply regulations only to that land and not to any of the other land. And what that also does is it allows us to blend the zones and the land uses that are allowed within the E and the I designations. And that will allow greater flexibility in the mixing of industrial uses with other uses so that we can sustain that industrial development with housing, commercial, office, other support, smaller industrial uses. So basically provide for a greater mix instead of just urban industrial uses there. It also allows for us to look at the consolidation. Well, it allows us to analyze and propose a consolidation of the really wide but only shallow sheet flow areas that cover the Rita 10 and much of the Southlands. And those areas, they severely limit the area's development potential, and they could be modified to follow the areas with the greatest potential, the greatest flow potential during a 100-year storm event. And so what we've done recently is remap that area, relook at the flooding through that area, and to pinpoint the areas where water is actually flowing. And it's not quite as expansive as what shows on the old maps from 30 years ago. And so through this process and through the subsequent pad and PCB process, we would look to align those corridors with where we actually still see flows today. And this would be much like the approach that was taken by Pima County with the Southeast Employment Logistics Center around the fairgrounds. They've taken some of those broader floodplain areas and narrowed those down to be consistent with where you actually see the water flow. And that's a similar approach to what was taken for the tributaries that feed into the Julian Wash for the H2K pad, the other side of I-10. So diving into the actual map details themselves here, you can see that what this amendment does is it focuses that medium high intensity urban, so it's that blue designation, it focuses it up along I-10 to be consistent with, you know, interstate commerce and having that direct access to the interstate there. And then that connection to the land on the east side of the interstate that's planned, as I mentioned, for industrial land use. And it also designates the land around the prisons. So that's the land that you see here in kind of the orangish gold color. So it sits between, you know, the prisons here on Wilmot and then the CELT, the Pima County Employment Logistics down here. So we felt like that would be an excellent designation of industrial between those two land uses there. And if you look and you see some of these kind of remnant outliers of LIR, so that's the low intensity rural that's been carried forward for the last 30 years, even that has more of an industrial kind of feel to it, because each of these parcels is either owned by, I believe this one right here is owned by El Paso Natural Gas, so it's part of their large high capacity or high pressure gas line that runs through here, and that sits at the southern edge of that Vale substation. So that's what I'm circling here with the cursor. And then you have this LIR piece here, which is owned by, I believe it's Pima County Sheriff's, and it's a shooting range, an outdoor shooting range. You have a couple of other parcels that are owned by City of Tucson. So not really, you know, low intensity rural uses, but more of your utility kind of use or industrial use there. And the other thing that we've shown here on this amended map is the realigned resource conservation corridors, and those coincide with the new floodplain mapping analysis that's been done since the RSSP was originally adopted. And then for map detail 8, again, it focuses that medium high intensity urban, that E designation shown in the blue, up along Interstate 10 and across from H2K. And then again, where we have our resource conservation coming through, it was a thin band on the previous map, and we've now expanded that out to be consistent with the flows that are coming across I-10 through this portion of the map detail. And then to tie it all together, this is where we've proposed this special area 1-05. And what this does is it allows us to, you know, consistently apply the changes that we're proposing across only the Arizona State Trust land. So any of those other out parcels that are included within the map details, those aren't included within this special area. So any of the changes, any of the proposed policies that we've crafted for this effort would only be specific to state trust land. And as I mentioned, what this special area allows us to do is it allows us to blend the uses and the zones that are allowed within the E and the I designations. So basically what it does is it adds the C3, I1, and I2 zones to that E designation, and then it specifies that anything that's allowed within E is also allowed within I. And overall, to back up some of the changes that we've done for the consolidation of the washes and set the stage for next steps through the PAD and the PCD process, we have crafted a number of policies that sit within this section of the document that are specific to wildlife and habitat and floodplain management. So where do we go from here? So this is sort of an overview of all of the steps that are in the process, because right now we're in the very first step, being the plan amendment. And so this is really, you know, where we lay the foundation for all the steps that come after. So this lays the groundwork for the rezoning, allows for that to move forward and really establishes that kind of high level policy direction for the rezoning. And once we move into the rezoning phase, that will establish the rights to develop certain permitted uses. It'll create specific development regulations, and it'll initiate preliminary studies for certain things like access, utilities, drainage, et cetera, the things that will be needed after the rezoning. This is really what adds the value at this level. So once it gets to the rezoning stage and is successful in securing that zoning, that's where value is added for the state land department to then take that land to market and put it out for bid. And so for that land sale, state trust land is packaged into what they call development units. And those development units are based on the area proposed by a particular end user for whatever development that they would like to do. And that land is then, you know, packaged up and sold at auction. And that's usually a process that's initiated by the applicant, not by the state land department. And from there, since there's still a lot of unknowns up to that point, there is what is known as a secondary planning process for all of state lands holdings. And so that secondary planning process is really where the rubber starts to hit the road. The purchaser or the winning bidder of that land must then complete any secondary planning efforts that were identified during the PAD and PCD. And that usually includes more detailed plans for, you know, the actual development itself, where the building will go, what size it will be, the access, the, you know, roadway improvements, drainage, grading, all of that gets wrapped into that secondary planning once, you know, a specific, you know, end user is involved and a project is on the table. And after that, it's securing the necessary approvals to move forward with development. And perhaps most importantly, until all the land has been sold within the zoned area, the Arizona State Land Department stays involved in what is happening with each of those development units. With each one that gets sold, they stay involved to ensure that the final developments align with the overall vision for the entire Southlands area. So they're not just packaging this up, selling it, and then forgetting about whatever else happens after that. They're making sure that everything works, cohesively throughout the entire area, because we are dealing with 8,300 acres for just the Rita 10. And then as you move further west to develop the rest of the Southlands, they want to make sure all of that is consistent and thought out ahead of time. So with that, unless I missed anything, we'll open it to questions from the commission.
All right. Thank you, Brian. I'd like to now open up this for questions from the commission. Commissioner McKenzie.
Hi. Thank you for that presentation. Mr. Underwood, was it? Could you get a little more granular on the comparison of the new floodplain mapping versus what was in the plan or whatever 30 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we've done since 30 years ago is actually go through and do some floodplain analysis based on existing, other existing studies that have happened in the area since the RSSP was adopted, and then actually running hydraulic modeling across that land, looking at the topography, looking at exactly where those flows are going. And so what you see on that map, the proposed map, and I think Samuel kind of touched on it in his presentation, is that he mentioned that those are subject to change because there will be further analysis that will need to be done as we move through the PAD PCD and also through the secondary planning. And that's really where final engineering, final drainage studies will be done to really hone in on what the widths of those corridors would look like. We've started to say, there's a minimum of certain width in certain areas. Maybe it's 500 feet wide or it's 600 feet wide, like you see in some of these other washes that we have throughout Tucson, like the Santa Cruz or the Rito. But really, that'll be decided, at those later stages.
Yeah. So you did high. So hydraulic modeling was done this time around. Where was the previous sort of designation or whatever based on just what kind of guesstimates, or did they do hydraulic modeling, but this is a more precise version of hydraulic modeling?
They did a more generalized drainage study for back in the 90s and in the early 2000s, I believe they looked at it again. And really what you're dealing with a lot of the flow that's out there is, broad, non-defined sheet flow. So it's, in a lot of cases, no greater even in a 100-year storm event than 6 feet six inches of flow depth. And so really the idea is trying to find those areas where perhaps it gets a little bit higher, it gets up to 2 or 3 feet and in that 100-year event, and concentrating, a future corridor in those locations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other question was for the gentleman from the city. I don't know if this is the appropriate time to ask him, but there was a bullet on the second to the last slide, utilize existing solutions, strategies for improved community design. And I just wondered if somebody could tell me what that really means.
Sure. I'm not sure if we want to stop sharing the screen or if I'm... Sure. So that bullet was referring to the Stormwater Technical Advisory Committee. And so that's an existing ad hoc committee that, currently reviews floodplain variances and floodplain flexibility. So that's what that statement is referring to. It's an existing body. It's been in place since 1997. And it was a product of the WASH ordinance, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I guess I still don't really understand what that bullet is trying to tell us. But
so I believe it's just trying to reference that it's an existing ad hoc committee that the city already has in place, and it's already has authority by the WASH ordinance. It's an existing ad hoc committee.
Okay, I still don't get the connection, but okay, let's just table that. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner Cassidy.
Hi, thank you. My question is about public outreach. Has there been any public outreach or involvement to date? And if so, what has the reaction been?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did hold a neighborhood meeting. Gosh, it's been probably at least 6 months. It was summer before the summer. So it's been quite a long time. Because it took us a while to get to this point and work through everything with staff. But we, I want to say, sent notices, about 300 or so notices. And we, was about 150? Okay. I was double there, so I exaggerated. But we got, I believe it was about 25 to 30 people that attended our neighborhood meeting. And mainly the questions were, you know, related to, you know, how, what will be built here? And, you know, how close will that industry get to us? What's the plan for the Sanborn corridor, and when will that happen, and where will that be in relation to the Sycamore Park neighborhood that's to the north of us there? And obviously we have no bearing on the Sanborn corridor, but there are quite a bit of existing flow patterns that wrap around that southern boundary of Sycamore Park. So there's kind of some de facto buffering already built in there. And we would certainly, you know, look to have some other, you know, mitigative measures to ensure compatibility with any of the adjacent residences that are close to us up on that north end.
And I just want to add that we did also reach out to the coalition. We've been working closely with the Coalition for Sonoran Desert Protection, actually on the H2K PAD that was mentioned, with exactly these types of consolidation, realignment of floodplains, and mitigation strategies, and enhancements, both mitigation on-site and off-site. And they are very aware of this. They know the next stage, which is going to be the PAD or PCD, is really going to establish a lot of what's in the H2K, and this sets the groundwork for that. So that outreach has also been done.
I should also add as well that although there are no neighborhood associations within a mile, we're just outside of the mile boundary. Is just outside of Rita Ranch. It almost touches it, but it doesn't. But we did go ahead and reach out to Al Wyrith, excuse me, and make sure he was aware of this project.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
Commissioner Martin.
Sorry. Looking at the maps, the east side map, the new map, doesn't seem to delineate. I think it's the DR area. I was a little bit confused where the boundary of the land uses were on that map. So the old map, I think, was clearer than the new map. So it's just kind of a drafting thing, but clarity, it would be nice to know where that those land uses are, or, you know, where they begin and end. So just a minor comment. Thanks.
And Chuck, was that for the east side of the interstate where there's the DR?
Yeah.
Okay.
East side only has one notation, and the old map had three. So there's three areas, and only one is noted as DR. If I recall, I can't look at it right now, but.
There's probably some changes we could make to make that a little clearer, because the old map and even with the new map, it's tough to make all of those land use changes really pop. So, but I hear your point, and we could probably add an additional link over to.
All right, Commissioner Zadir.
Hi, thank you. So I have a few questions. It's going to go back to what Jason said as far as the hydraulic modeling. And so how does this relate to the new recent FEMA floodplain maps? You said this was hydraulic modeling, which is basically something done on a computer, as long as FEMA. How does this, your new modeling correlate with the new FEMA floodplains? And is there going to be any issues with that? Question one. And also, since this is like, well, almost, 8,300 acres of land that has a lot of drainage comparatively going through it, how are you going to, is it going to, we change this, how is it going to mitigate future owners of the property not affecting runoff into adjacent properties? So I'm just kind of trying to clarify some of the flooding issues that are there. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful questions, Commissioner Abreeza. So I'll touch on the first one, the FEMA floodplain issues. Luckily, there are none. So there is no FEMA flood, mapped FEMA floodplain within the RETA 10 area. And State Land Department has also done a preliminary jurisdictional delineation, and there are no jurisdictional washes within the RETA 10 area either. So no 100-year floodplain designated by FEMA, no 404 washes from the Corps. And while we move through, the later stages of, a PAD or a PCD and then secondary planning, that's where, really the analysis will be done to comply with all the city's codes, which have those protections baked in for protecting upstream and downstream property owners. So we can't increase or decrease the amount of drainage that's coming off of any of the portions of RETA 10 that are proposed for development. And within those areas that are proposed for development, the city of Tucson has made it clear to us that we will be required to actually reduce the flow that's coming off of those areas that are being developed. And that's part of the critical basin designation and trying to balance that basin. And so we've absolutely looked at that, and we're prepared to be able to make sure that there is no downstream or upstream flooding impacts.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Commissioner McKenzie.
Yeah. Would we be able to take a look at the hydraulic modeling study? I did that kind of stuff in a former life, and would just be curious to, take a closer look, since it seems to be key to the, to the redevelopment or the whatever redesignation of this area. I'd like to see it if that's for public consumption.
Yeah, we can get a copy of our engineer's work, Somas's work, and perhaps to staff, and they can get it to the commission.
Great, thank you.
I would like to just be clear that this is just creating the pathway that would allow us to do additional modeling in the PCD and finer tuned hydraulic analysis within the PCD. So the RSSP as it exists today wouldn't even let us contemplate this channelization as part of our PCD process. And through this plan amendment, we are creating the avenue that would allow us to do that. So just rest assured that there will be additional modeling and hydraulic analysis done as part and through the PCD process, which is the next step.
Yep, perfectly understood. Thank you.
Commissioner Lampo.
Hi, I just had one quick question. What is the existing zoning on the subject property?
Commissioner Lampo, the lion's share of it, if not all of it, is RH, so rural homestead.
So I think it would be good to see, because this is sort of paving the way for some more intense land uses, it might be good to see maybe a breakdown of what this could open the door for. So some of the more odious uses, industrial, I think it would be good to see just a little bit of a breakdown, because right now it's a very low intensity, and you know, this would open the door for much more intense land uses on that property.
And if I can, again, I'm with the State Land Department. That is a common holding zone. State statute requires that a minimum of one dwelling unit per acre be designated for state trust land. And so that is a common holding zone for state trust land across the entire state of Arizona. And that is why we, as the State Land Department and trustee and fiduciary for the trust, rezone property in advance of sale. So this is, it is not at all unusual to see that rural residential holding zone, even on land off the one on 101 in North Scottsdale. And we will go in and rezone that, so.
Well, and that's also why we've proposed to sort of blend that industrial, urban industrial designation with the medium high intensity urban, because the medium high intensity urban allows for your other zoning classifications. So you get your office, you get your commercial, you get all your residential in there too. And so, you know, if we're able to do that, then we're able to then fill in some of those pockets with other uses to ensure that kind of compatibility, and not just have, you know, all industrial.
Great. Glad to hear it. Thanks.
Yeah. Commissioners, did you?
Hi, thanks. So I know the State Land Commission is kind of limited guidance to what they want to see done, but along with the city codes and everything that goes in with a new development like this, what percentage of this area will be left as open space? And what I'm defining as open space is not a drainage canal or a retention area, but actual usable open space for people. Is there any type of process that goes in, since this is going to be a really mixed use thing, to, you know, just it's important not to create a big cement 8,000 acre cement pad out next to the interstate. I mean, I know that's not what's going to happen, but just a question. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another one of the items that once we get to the PAD and the PCD process, and particularly once we're into that secondary planning phase, where we'll really understand exactly how much open space and where that will be. But the intent is that we would have, you know, our contiguous wildlife corridors that follow the washes, but you would also have you know, dispersed open space and recreational opportunities throughout this area. You know, it's a big opportunity to potentially break the loop along one of those washes as well. Continue that, really create the full loop through the south side there. So it's something we're excited about, just not quite at that level where we can pinpoint where that will be and how much it will be.
Thank you.
Yep. The lights turned off on me. All right. Well, okay. Mr. Commissioner McKenzie, one more question.
Yeah, thanks. This is more of a general question. Who are the other 12 beneficiaries that get 1/9 of the money from that acreage?
So I don't know the specific beneficiaries for this land. The other beneficiaries of state trust land, and keep in mind, this was established at statehood, so some of the names have changed. But in general, it's K-12 public schools. So if we sell land, if we sell a section of land and K-12 is the underlying beneficiary, that money goes to the treasurer's office into a fund, a permanent fund, and it benefits all of Arizona's public schools, not just, you know, Tucson or Pima County. It goes to the statewide fund. And you've probably heard Prop 123 in the news lately. That is dealing with that permanent fund, how much can be drawn from that to fund education.
Yeah, no, I get that part. Thank you. I'm just wondering who the other 13 beneficiaries, and those 13 share 1/9 of the acreage. I'm just curious who some of them are.
U of A, ASU, NAU, the School for the Deaf and Blind, the Pioneers Home in Prescott. The government buildings were a beneficiary, the state hospital and state prisons. Generally, those are the beneficiaries for the state trust.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, Commissioner.
All right, I see no more questions from the commission. With that, I'd like to thank the applicants and staff for their presentations and their responses to our questions. And I'd like to open this up for a motion to set a public hearing on the Rincon Southeast Regional Plan Amendment for March 6th, 2024. Can I have a motion for a vote?
So moved.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
All right. Do I need to call out who made the motion and who made the second? Steph? Dan?
I've captured that in this case. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. Well, then we'll call for a vote. All those in favor of setting the Planning Commission for public hearing on March 6th, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. Okay, looks like the motion passes, and we'll move on to our next. Okay, would please staff please update the commission on the 2024 public notice statement on meeting types?
Sure, excellent. Thank you, commissioners. I hope you're doing well. So this item is to discuss the meeting format for the Planning Commission moving forward. Recently, the City Clerk's Office provided some guidance to their boards, committees, and commissions on hybrid meetings, and this really is a response to that. So we've kind of explored some of our options with moving these, which have been these meetings to a primarily kind of in-person option with a virtual option. And we wanted to really get your feedback on this. As you know, up until the pandemic, all of the Planning Commission meetings were in person and previously held in the mayor and council chambers. Those were in person only, and then we would record them with audio. Since the time we did go remote, I know in the commission we've had conversations about potentially going back to in-person meetings. And then also, you know, we have heard some comments from the public as far as wanting to come back for those in-person meetings at the mayor and council chambers with that option to attend virtually. So we have been working with our clerk's office to kind of make sure that the space is set up for this. It is in pretty good shape, and we feel that if we were to move to kind of an in-person option at the mayor and council chambers for our meetings moving forward, it would really help to increase the overall accessibility of the Planning Commission meetings. It would not only allow for that in-person kind of dialogue, But it would also provide that virtual option. So the people that may be on the east side who may not be able to make it all the way down here and park and everything and deal with that could still attend and still comment and provide feedback on some of those items. If this, if we were to make this change moving forward, we would need to amend this public notice statement for the 2024 calendar year, basically saying that we would be moving to mayor and council chambers with a virtual option. And then ultimately, because it is the commission's choice, we wanted to provide this time for you all to discuss and then provide us direction on really how you would like to move forward. So I'll just kind of turn it over to you.
Commissioner Young.
Yes, I guess I would strongly encourage us to continue virtual. A couple of reasons. I think doing this in person makes it twice the time commitment, getting downtown, parking, et cetera, and then getting back home. And I think just the nature of, the state, I would say, of commissions and whatnot within the city, I think many struggle to get people to be on them. And I think making it as easy as possible for people to do it is the way to go. And frankly, I think it's more accessible for folks who are unable to get out of their homes and just for other reasons, life reasons, can't make it in person. And I understand there's a hybrid option, but I do really think it's important to have a significant virtual infrastructure for both commissioners and members of the public. So if commissioners can also attend virtually in the hybrid situation, I think that would work, but keeping that virtual option, I think, is critical. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinney.
Thanks. Yeah, I had a similar question and a comment. I would be in support of some level of hybrid if the commissioners also have the option to attend virtually. And if that would be the case, then I would say, I'm all for having a hybrid. Maybe even consider designating every other meeting or every third meeting being hybrid, the rest of them being purely virtual, something like that.
Commissioner McKenzie.
Yeah, similar. I'd be certainly in favor. Well, definitely keeping the virtual option, so accessibility is maximized. I think that's really critical. But I think at least every other meeting having it in person. I'd like to get a chance to get to know all these people on the screen, frankly, and interact with them a bit more. I think it's more comfortable to interact with people, on screen when you know them in person. So that's my view. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Lampo.
Yeah, I would be all for hybrid meetings. I'm a big fan of seeing all of your smiling faces in person. I think it encourages more of a dialogue. I am all for it. I have worked as staff for numerous boards, and after COVID happened, we went to hybrid in each of those instances, and a little rocky at first, but worked out the kinks, and they're still using hybrid to this day. So I think it can be successful. And on the off chance that I can't make it in person, it would be nice to be able to log on virtually. So that's my 2 cents. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Cassidy.
Hi, I'll just say that I would echo the comments of the other commission members. I think the virtual option is very important, both for members of the public who can't get out of the house or who have small kids, as well as for commissioners. It's a long drive for me out from the Rita Ranch area. So like Commissioner Young said, it doubles the commitment. That said, I thought there was some conversation early on about the types of meetings that would be strictly virtual versus hybrid. Is the idea still to have the meetings that are primarily informational or study sessions be held virtually, and then to try and do the hybrid option for the more public intensive types of cases?
So Commissioner Cassidy, we did get direction from the clerk's office that they would like us to choose one option for all meetings. It really has to do with notice and just consistency for the public. But that doesn't mean that we couldn't just do a hybrid option for all. And then there's that option to still attend virtually. But we as staff would go to the chambers, get everything set up, and those that wanted to come in person could do so.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Zagiram.
Hi. Yeah, I'm going to agree. I was thinking exactly what Anna was thinking, is a lot of times I know I've appeared in a public, having a public hearing, speaking to whether it's the mayor and council or commission, or is important, I think, for citizens. And I think a hybrid, I don't know if a hybrid option is just every single time, and that would allow citizens to actually, they can actually still come to the mayor and council chambers and be there for a public hearing. But personally, if there was a public hearing, I would do my best to be there in person. But I like the hybrid option. Thank you.
Commissioner Young.
Yeah, just one more thought / question. I guess my question is mayor and council chambers adequately set up to actually have hybrid meetings? Because the reason I ask is because if the technology is not there, I think the hybrid meeting is actually the worst of all worlds. As much as I want to be able to meet in person, I feel like, you know, the folks that are in the room are kind of the first class citizens of the meeting, and people trying to join hybrid are kind of relegated to second class. So if we do the hybrid, I really want to make sure that the technology is there, and I know that can often be a heavy lift. So just wanted to ask that question and put that out there.
Muted. Yes, Commissioner Young. So couple things related to that. One is that mayor and council have been doing kind of the hybrid option, at the very least for the commission, for the council members. We went over there today and actually tested it out because we wanted to make sure that that was the case. And do believe that they have set it up in a way that allows for a pretty easy way to kind of set up the virtual meeting. We'll need a staff member in back that kind of controls all the kind of the Zoom stuff and make sure that things are working. But I do believe that it should be should work well and allow for, you know, not there not to be that barrier between the online people and the virtual people.
Well, I'd like to kind of agree and echo everybody else's sentiment on this. I personally think a hybrid solution would be good. And to what Commissioner Young said, you know, hybrids can be terrible. And it would be interesting to see kind of like the process to ensure that, you know, there was an order of hands raised to who comes first and who goes second. If there's the in-person who get to speak first, and then everybody virtually speaks second, like that kind of turns into that first class, second class citizenry issue. But to the same point, another question about quorum and counting quorum. If, you know, commissioners who are able to attend and those who are attending virtually, is it quorum count the same, or would only the, yeah, okay. Head nod, I'll take it. Yeah, I'm kind of, yeah, that's what I have.
Commissioner Ortiz Pino, we appreciate the feedback on the kind of how to order people, and we'll definitely kind of work that out. One other thing I do want to mention that we're planning on doing is we're going to do kind of a mock meeting as well in the next week or two, just to kind of, we're going to have, you know, staff members acting as people of the public, as some of the commissioners, and kind of do that type of thing in order to really, you know, make sure that it's functioning well and kind of work out some of those kinks before we do that first meeting.
So do we take a motion to move forward with changing the statement, or like what happens next? Commissioners, did you, I see your question. This is just a question that I had.
I'll answer that real quick, and then I'll let Commissioner Sajir go. I think just a motion it sounds to me like the hybrid option seems right. You don't need it necessarily a vote. What we do is we would make an amendment to the public notice statement, and that's generally done by the chair. So we'd reach out to Chair Willett, who is obviously not here, to do so.
Commissioner Zajir, sorry about that.
Okay, this is, so you said a mock meeting. Do you need any of us to actually show up to your mock meeting, Dan? Rather than somebody just sitting in another office somewhere in the city of Tucson, you know, logging in from our home spots, would you require that?
If we see that we need to test that out with you, we'd definitely reach out. I appreciate that. And just kind of related to what you had mentioned, Vice Chair Ortiz Pino, if you do want to do a vote for this, just to kind of record it, please feel free to do so. That may motion and a vote may be the cleanest way to do so.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what I was thinking. Just there were some differing opinions, and just to make sure that we had a consensus on moving forward. Would someone like to put forth a motion on how to address this?
I will make a motion to consider the use of hybrid meetings in future planning commission meetings.
So I don't know if it's considering, it's to either do or do not. Is that correct? I think we're doing the considering right now.
Well, then I will make a motion to hold future planning commission meetings in a hybrid format.
I would second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
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 Aye. Are there any nays? Okay. I believe the ayes have it, and we can move forward to direct staff to adjust the public notice statement for a hybrid planning commission meeting moving forward for 2024. Okay, I keep on forgetting I have a next job here. Would staff please provide PDSD updates to the commission, item 7?
I can provide a few updates from the department. So a couple things happening at PDSD. We're doing a lot of hiring right now. We have a lot of positions open in the department and bringing on new staff, including landscape architect, engineer, planners, lead planners. So a lot of opportunities in the department and a lot of recruitment and hiring going on. Another thing we're working on right now is updating our fees. Mayor and Council have initiated an update to development review fees. So that is undergoing public outreach right now. We're getting a lot of feedback, and that could go to Mayor and Council for a public hearing April 9th. And then we've given you guys a few updates on Plan Tucson update, the update of our general plan. Some of you attended our recent community forum. It was great to see many of the planning commissioners there, a few. Thanks for attending and sharing your feedback. We're taking in a lot of that feedback and now starting to develop draft policies for the general plan, which our working groups are going to be developing over the next several months before sharing those with the community for broader input. And then we're also doing a customer survey right now. That's available on our website. So please feel free to share your thoughts and any input on really kind of the more customer facing services that we provide. I know many of you interact with our department in a number of ways, so we would love to get your feedback on how we can improve our services to the community. I think that's it. I'll share a link for that survey in the chat.
All right, thank you, Corin. Item 8, future agenda items. Would staff please provide a commission with a preview of upcoming future agenda items?
Sure. Great. So we have the two items from tonight. We'll be coming back to you for a public hearing on March 6th. So that'll be the Rincon Southeast Subregional Plan Amendment and then the Major Streets and Routes Plan Amendment. And then an additional plan amendment will be coming to you as well for a study session at that meeting. And that is the Bear Canyon Neighborhood Plan Amendment. So we haven't had many plan amendments over the last couple of years, but got a bunch of them here in 2024.
Thank you, Dan. All right. Item 9, call to the audience. It's time I'd like to offer the public an opportunity to speak on any subject that is not listed on the current agenda as a public hearing. If anyone would like to speak, please raise their hand. Hearing none, I think we can call for a motion to end the meeting. Is that correct? Do I hear a motion?
I motion to end the meeting.
Second.
Second. Thank you. Do I need a motion to end a study session?
Yes, you would do it a motion to adjourn, and then people vote.
The chair, this is Carrie. I think the chair can just move to adjourn the meeting at the end. So, but it doesn't matter if you do it by vote either.
I think we're all very happy to adjourn. All right. Thank you for this learning experience as your vice chair. We are adjourned.
All right.
Thank you for undertaking it.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.